Welcome to the Faculty of Humanities and Social Science Research Podcast Series at the University of Nottingham, Ningbo, China, the first Sino-foreign university. I'm Dr. Mary Jane Ainslie, Associate Professor in International Communications.
And I'm Dr. Derek Irwin, Associate Professor of Applied Linguistics. We're coming to you from the Language and Pedagogy Laboratory here at the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences.
For this edition of the series, we are joined by Dr. Xuyan Lo.
Xuyan's an assistant professor in the School of Economics, which he joined in 2018 after receiving her PhD in economics from the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Xuyan's primary research field is labor economics, covering education, marriage, and intra-household issues.
In September 2022, Xuyan published the paper, Does the Early Bird Catch the Worm? The Effect of School Starting Age on Educational Attainment and Labor Market Outcomes, Evidence from Chinese Urban Twins Data, in the Journal of Comparative Economics. The paper was written in collaboration with Dr. Xu Lin from the Capital University of Economics and Business and Dr. Junsen Zhang from Zhejiang University.
Excellent institutions, by the way.
They really are.
They really are. And it's nice to see sort of all universities that are within China. I think that's the case.
Well, absolutely. This kind of collaborative work is something that is really nice to see people doing.
And it's also nice to see Chinese people in China writing on China as well. It's always quite nice.
In English, so we can understand it. Sorry.
Oh, Derek, you just spoiled it.
We had a glowing moment there for a second. I could understand a children's book in Chinese, I think, but not a paper in economics, I'm afraid.
Okay, so enough about Derek. Let's get back to the paper. Derek, I love a good twin study.
Who doesn't, Mary?
Yeah. You know, like, it seems to be such a solid basis for actually kind of launching an analysis in this way. Because, you know, you can't argue with genetic similarity here, genetically identical people. Or maybe you can?
I was about to, but I don't think I will now that you've said I'm not allowed. Twin studies are fascinating. Absolutely. Yeah. We use them in linguistics as well. But this one I found really, really interesting because it was looking at something which is enormously complicated. Mm-hmm. So the idea of school starting age, various types of outcomes.
Yeah.
And because there's lots of claims made about this and the idea of early bird catching the worm and in some ways you would think, oh, starting kids earlier in school leads to better success rates. But then you think about it a little while and you say, oh, wait, maybe starting later is better.
Being someone who has zero interest or experience in kids, I have no interest in this. Okay. So actually you're like, oh, you'd think about this. I hadn't actually thought about this.
Mary, were you a kid at one point?
Well, I guess so, but it was a while ago. Yeah. I mean, not as long ago as it was for you, obviously.
Cruel and inhumane.
Thank you very much. I try. But yeah, I think what I got from this paper was there is this real strong investment in the idea of absolutely starting kids in formal education as early as you can. And when I sort of saw that, it immediately, the reaction from me was quite visceral in the sense that I was like, oh, that seems quite unhealthy to have that obsession and that kind of need. But I guess that's something that obviously from a personal level, I wouldn't really understand. But I mean, you are a parent.
Apparently.
I've met both your kids and they seem very well-rounded human beings, much more so than you are.
Absolutely. They surpass me on all fronts.
Shows you're doing a good job. I'm guessing it wasn't an obsession of yours to sort of immediately have your kids in formal education, or maybe it was and you kind of felt pressured. Is this something that you feel as a parent? I am genuinely interested.
Yeah, I don't think there's as much choice in Canada. So our kids were born there. And we didn't think about when they started. They just kind of had this starting age. Xuyan wants to jump in.
We should let her, because she's
the expert.
We're starting to waffle. Xuyan, please do give us an overview and an introduction to your paper.
So first of all, thanks, Derry and Mary, having me here. So I'm very happy to introduce my paper through this platform. Before I introduce my paper, my first question is, did you remember when you started your formal schooling?
See, that's an interesting question because I would have to
say no.
Well, it was back when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
It was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
But no, I was also, because the Canadian system operates on the January 1st cutoff.
Mm, yeah.
So it's kind of a strange one where the school year starts
January
in September.
1st? Okay.
But the year you enroll is more dependent on the actual year of birth.
Uh-huh.
So because my birthday is late October, I was an early starter.
Yeah.
So I started when I was 4 in kindergarten, and then I think my mom might remember this differently.
I mean, when we say formal education, is kindergarten considered to be formal education? Well, yeah, because that if I was asked that question, then I'd be like, well, I guess 4, but then when I actually went in there, it wasn't sort of as formal and structured as perhaps you would sort of expect. I'm not sure whether it would come under that rubric. But please continue. We're waffling again, Darren.
No. She asked me the question. She's an excellent interviewer.
Okay, well, I'm waffling there.
Just started from a very casual.
Thank you. Shriyam, when did you start?
Yes, that is what I want to start it from. Actually, we have a lot of different policies across countries as in Canada. It's maybe very different from China. Yeah, I actually, these research ideas were planted when I was a kid. Because as in the title, you know, does the early bird catch the worm? Actually, this saying is very popular in China, and especially in Chinese parents. So my parents insisted in this saying, and they told me that you are the early bird, you should be the early bird. So you need to start a school early. And you know that I am the youngest one in my class when I started the primary school. So from my experience and from my research, I think the formal education is started from the primary school rather than the preschool or kindergarten, because we started the academic environment, the first answer to Mary's question. And another thing is that because of this kind of belief, I feel that I'm special. I'm the only one who started the primary school at 6.
Mm-hmm.
My classmates, the friends around me is around 7 or 8. So I think I am excellent.
Well, you did catch the worm.
You ended up
with a doctorate.
Finally, yes.
So
according to the degree, yeah. I believe that. You know, although, yes, that is another story, maybe I'll cut it after this interview. So, yes, go. I think it's around when I was 25 or 26. Actually, my mom told me that I performed very, very badly in the first grade and the second grade.
Really?
But I started to be better since my third grade. So, my memory is wrong. I still feel I was very special. But the things changed because when I was in high school, I realized half of my classmates started the primary school at 6, and the remaining half started at 7. So, it's thought that am I special enough? Right?
One question I had, actually, Shriyam, reading your paper, because you were talking about the median age of starting and you know, the question is, do we count age the same way here? So if you have self-reporting age for Chinese people, could they be self-reporting not by date of birth, but rather by other measures of age?
Yes, the measurement is a very important issue, and we also discussed in this paper. So beyond this paper, I would like to just talk about the age measurement. So from the daily life in China, usually we use the age, like it's not actually age, it's age plus one in China. So when we say I started primary school at 6, it's the correct calculation according to the birth date and the calendar year. It's age 6. But in daily China, actually, we use 7 rather than the actual measurement of the age.
That's what I was wondering, because there's the spring festival age calculation. So the paper controls for this.
Yeah,
so it is actually 7 years old or 7.11 years
because
is the average age.
Because this is twin data. So actually we assume that the calculation of the age is similar within the family. They have the same family education background. So we assume that the age calculation is similar, one thing. Second thing is we considered about the measurement error, self-reported measurement error. So we use some IV to Oh, sorry. Instrumental variable. This is
technical terms. We appreciate them being explained.
Humanities academics. Sorry.
Yes. It's something related to the statistics. So we use this kind of method to deal with the potential misreport measurement errors in terms of age. So it's robust. The result is consistent. But beyond this, what I want to measure about the age measurement is a very interesting story from Korea. I read a paper. It's not actually an economic paper. I think it's kind of a demographic paper. So age calculation is similar to China. Say you were born in December, but once it is turned over to January, then you is plus one. You are aged two. Even though you were born in late December, but you turn to age two when it is next year, January 1 or January 2, right? So this is similar to China, but the different thing is that culture is different. In Korea, actually, they have so-called age culture. So also argue that it is affected by Confucian culture. People view age is so important in daily life and in labor market. So actually, the younger people or the cohorts or the workers in the workplace was divided by the age group. So it's very important. If you are older, and then I should show my respect to you. I should make a low bow when greeting, you know. So you are senior and I have to show my respect. I have to follow your steps. So even the way they communicate, they need use some specific respectful tone.
I found I was in the elevator a few years back and I suddenly shifted to being called Yeye. And so in Chinese meaning grandfather, right? So now that I've graduated to grandfather, I just feel much better about myself.
How many years ago was this? Because I kind of thought of you in that way for quite a while.
See, your age jokes no longer bother me now that we've agreed to venerate age on this program.
Oh, okay. Damn.
So let me back to the career.
Yes,
story.
Of course.
Yes. So the same that one thing is about the calculation of the age. Another thing is about the culture toward age. So the Korean parents saw that if their children were the youngest in the classroom, the children may be not feel so good. Perhaps it's a burden for the children because they will feel pleasure if they are the youngest within the same classroom. So the parents are trying to delay or change the birth date for their children in order to make sure their children's classmates are at the same age or at least not the youngest in the classroom.
So you've got two divergent forces there.
Yeah,
right?
Totally different idea. For Chinese parents, they believe early bird catches the worm. But for Korean parents, they thought too young in the classroom is harmful.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that, I think, in the systems I'm more familiar with coming through, that it is considered a disadvantage to be the youngest person in a class.
Yeah. Back to the economic research, why age matters, right? What's the proper school starting age for the students in the long run, in the short run? So why we should start as a performal school at 6 or at 7? In some countries, it's 6, like China. Mm-hmm. In some countries, it's 7, like Denmark or some European countries. Because the age is very important, right? If they are not well developed in terms of attention or social skills, they cannot survive in the new environment, like academic environment in a school. They needed to social with their classmates, something like this. So one string literature said it's a maturity effect. Students need to be ready for the academic environment because they are mature enough to start the primary school. And they are relatively older than their classmates, then they are mature enough to capture or reach this advantage.
Is there also a kind of element there based on the parents' needs too?
Yeah.
Because I can imagine that there are some situations where they would really want children around, and there will be other situations where they'd be like, thank goodness we can pack them off to school now. So I imagine parents' needs also filter into this.
Yes, later I will discuss about this part, actually. Oh. Of course, it's very important. So one thing is, back to the why age is important. So one thing is you maybe get some benefits if you are the oldest one. Like in US, people thought the sports are very important. So ability in sports, because people will thought they are the star if you are good at for the balls and like this. But in China, it might be a different story.
Listening to you talk about this, I'm fascinated by these various different contexts the world and these different narratives. But there also seems to be another sort of factor that really does interest me, which is actually the child's awareness of their age. Because I'm sort of fascinated by the idea that for instance, you knew that you were the youngest very much. Okay. Yeah. So you have a situation where the children seem to know who's oldest and who's youngest in the class. And I don't remember that ever being a factor sort of when I was a child. I think there were a few kids who were slightly older or slightly younger for whatever reason. And I don't remember ever being aware of that as a child or aware of the significance of that. We were aware of when birthdays were because we were all excited about birthdays, but who was sort of older or younger never seemed to be a factor. And I'm fascinated that seems to have been pointed out to you by your parents, you know, or by this environment. Like, you must know that you're the youngest. You must know that you're special in this way.
Yeah. So, actually, this is another point about that. This is so-called the peer effect. As my parents told me that I'm special because I am the youngest one, I should learn a lot from my classmates, you know. So this is so-called peer effect. So if you started this primary school earlier, comparing to the same age cohort, then you may so-called start your career or start your competition as early as possible. It's also a very famous saying in China. So to be famous as early as possible. And it's a similar thing. So this is peer effects. Learn from your peers. They are mature enough, right? So you can learn something from them. And comparing to the same age cohort, you're better. So if the maturity effect is larger than the peer effects, some older, later starters will benefit or perform better. But if the peer effects dominate the maturity effect, then the early bird will benefit from this early school starting.
So it depends very much on the environment that's created by the children themselves. Is that right?
It's one possibility. So this is a relative comparison between these two effects. Based on what we observe, we thought we can figure out which effect is more important. So in developing countries, some parents lack of knowledge. If children are ready for formal school, they may get some advantage. But actually, if the parents lack of knowledge to well educate their children at home, why don't they send their children to formal education, right? Because for those developing country parents, actually, they lack of knowledge and they can't guarantee that their parents could be well educated at home. Their children perhaps can gain better education in a formal school. Why don't they send their children earlier to the school? One thing. Second issue is that actually in some developed countries or in some societies, parents want to back to the labor market as early as possible. So they can release the labor within the household. As you said, if I have two children, and one is younger and one is older. So I want to just send one to formal school and I can take good care of another one. It's also possible. This is a selection by the parents, right? So what we observe or what my feeling is, at the very beginning, we thought the younger maybe achieve better education, better academic performance, or the older maybe perform better. What we observe in reality is not truly the so-called early bird effect. It might be some other reasons, like you said. It might be because of culture, maybe because of these parent selection issues or family backgrounds. So this is one of the issues that this paper wants to deal with. While we use the twins data, because we can exclude or control the family background, the same parents, the same cultivation methods, something like this.
Maybe you can talk more about why you actually use twins.
Yeah.
Because one thing that was actually surprising to me was that I didn't realize that it is actually often the case that the twins will start school at different times.
Yeah.
I just kind of seen, oh, twins, they'll both send them. And then actually, no, this is not the case.
Before I answer why twins start primary school at different age, I want to explain a little bit why I use these training method. So actually, as I said, we observed this pattern and we tried to figure out is it true that early bird catches the worm or it is reverse conclusion in another direction? So we usually in economics, we try to analyze this kind of correlation and using the data and figure out whether it's positive correlated or negative correlated, right? But there are so many issues that will be in the black box. As you said, maybe it's because of children themselves, say, reinforce this effect, or parents, maybe they have their own consideration to send the children earlier to school or later to school, something like this. So there are so many issues, factors in the
paper. In the paper, I think you call these unobservable values.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And even within the same family, you mentioned that circumstances could change from one child to the next.
Yeah. Because even some paper actually using the siblings to compare this effect. But for the siblings, it's different from the twins. You know, twins were born in the same timing, but actually for the siblings, there will be some gap. Right, or gap. Maybe it's a 2 year or 3 year gap. But in this sense, parents may change their mind, or you know that in the family economics, people know that the birth order is also very important. People may pay much attention or more patient to the first child. I don't know whether it's true or not. Yeah, parents.
It's cultural as well, right? Okay. So there are cultural roles that are assigned to various children in various places. But I am not going to say in my family that's the case or not.
Okay. So what I want to say is that even comparison between the siblings is also biased because some time varying factors within household. Because parents may have different incomes or their attitude, their philosophy in the education change, something like this. So there's still something in black box. That is why we needed to deal with this thing. We needed to control those comparable or the twins and siblings share the same factors. Using the twins, actually, we can control the same genes, first of all. And second, actually, it's because they were born at the first, at the same timing. So when the parents cultivate them, we can actually control these similarities within a household to the maximized extent. To our best knowledge, actually, this is the best way to control the family factors because they are at the same timing. So comparing Hongshan studies using the siblings comparison, we are control more and can control more of those unobservable factors in the black box.
I found that really fascinating. But much like Mary, when I first came to the paper, I thought, how common is this phenomenon? And our listeners might not understand that either. And in the paper, you explain it under a few factors, but the most convincing one to me is because of the cost of education.
Yes.
That maybe parents wouldn't have the option to send both of their twins at the same time, particularly, and your finding was when there are more children in a household. So that I found really interesting, and it helped me understand how this could come about, because, you know, we wouldn't think necessarily if you had twins, why would you send them in separate years?
Frankly speaking, it's also challenged by the referees. Yes, of course, it's very strange if we have enough money, if the twins share the same resources, why they can't attend the primary school simultaneously. So my argument is that actually the data was collected in 2002, and those people are aged from 18 to 65. So it's actually not so updated data. Mm-hmm. And this cohort, most of them is born from before the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So in China, the compulsory education rule was implemented in 1986, actually, mm-hmm. on average. Some cities implemented this policy early, like Shanghai, but some provinces implemented this policy in early 1992, like Hainan. So I mentioned the compulsory education rule because before the compulsory education rule, actually parents can decide when they can send their children make their children start the primary school. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's depending on the social norms, the peers around, and it's usually the average school starting age is around 8 or 8.5 in early 1970 birth cohorts. You know, but nowadays the average is around 60.5 or lower than 7 because of the compulsory education rule. It explicitly assumes that all the children should start the primary school as a calendar year when they turn to 6. But before that, the tuition fee is not covered by the government. But after the compulsory education rules, the government claimed that they will gradually cover those tuition fees in these compulsory education periods, like a primary school, junior high school. So my argument in the paper, why the twins started the primary school at different high age is because parents may short of money, can't afford the tuition fee. And I had provided some evidence, like compare the families where the twins started the primary school at the same age to the families where the twins didn't attend the primary school at the same age. So you can see that the parents have a lower education or more siblings. So children in this kind of family will start a primary school at a different age. So this is one intuitive or hypothesis. So it's actually not direct evidence, but we have no other choice to think out why they start the primary school early. Another issue, we are trying to exclude some potential selection within the household. One thing is birth order, as I said. Even for the twins data, they have the birth order, maybe someone came out earlier than the other. So we checked the birth order. Actually, the birth also doesn't matter, one thing. The second thing is the birth weight, because birth weight is a very important indicator to indicate the endowments that the children have.
Sorry, can I quickly jump in because this wasn't fully clear. Mm-hmm. What is the correlation between birth weight and these endowments? So is it the higher the birth weight, that the more likelihood? Yes?
Because when you were, if you are twins, you are in the, when you were cultivated in the eggs, actually you are trying to get resources from your mom, right? So it's also natural, but they are competitive. Yeah, when they are in an egg.
No. That suddenly is clear to me because, again, my frame of reference wasn't for the twins themselves, because when you have more than one fetus inside of the womb, presumably there is a competition for the resources. Yeah. So thank you.
So the birth weight is an outcome we can observe. So the higher birth weight indicating actually he might be healthier because he has more resources. This is the so-called endowment. When they were born, they get this high birth weight. So according to the literature in the economics, people did a lot of research about how the birth weight affects those outcomes, adult outcomes.
Yeah. With just twins, or is this also true of single birth?
As far as I know, many research is regarding on the twins, because birth weight is regarding on the resource and the endowment they were born when they were born. So most of the twin studies in economics will control this kind of birth weight. It's a very important indicator.
Yeah. Makes total sense. Yeah. That helps me a lot.
This is a whole new world for me. This is fascinating. Yeah. Just saying that, because you're mentioning cities a lot. The paper specifically looks at data from urban areas, doesn't
urban,
it? Is that because rural data does not exist, or...?
Yeah, actually, I haven't involved in this data collection, but it's not easy, in China. And we would like to collect some data about the twins. Mm-hmm. So we needed to have some cooperation with the local government. We designed the data and we tried to figure out some targets for twins. So we double checked with the government, local government, and we needed to visit the household.
Right.
One by one. And in rural areas, it's more easy to cooperate with the local government, cooperate with the household. And this is one potential reason why we only collect the urban part. It's easier for us to follow up.
I imagine the data is also more complete from urban areas.
Yeah, it's coming from the urban areas. It's in 2002. Actually, 10 years ago is around 2012. Mm-hmm. And 2013, actually, they did a second wave for the child twins. It's another target. So the responders are totally different from this survey. So in that survey, they actually assessed some rural household. But in 2002, it's not easy to assess those rural households, especially for those rural households with twins. So when I was a PhD student, my supervisor and his co-author actually worked together to collect this data. And they said actually they spent a lot of time to negotiation with the local governments and ask them for help to assess this household. Otherwise, why they respond to you, right? And they have guaranteed that there are two twins. In China, some researchers complained that in China, some parents actually misreport this is twin because the one child policy, you know, some parents will fake the siblings to be twins.
I guess if they're close enough in age, you might get away with it. My kids actually were 18 months apart, or still are, but...
Yeah, has that changed?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But when they were young here, at certain points, people would look at them and ask us if they were twins.
Mm. Oh.
And I think there's been a kind of increase in multiple birth numbers as well, thanks to fertility treatments, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so twins were allowed under the one child policy.
It's not only
right?
identical twin, but also some non-identical twins. Mm-hmm. So twins may be cultivated from two eggs. Say, not so similar.
Which also provides you with data, right? So you have identical twin data where you have 100% of the genes that are shared between the twins. And then you have what we sometimes call fraternal twins or non-identical twins, which do they share the same amount of genetic information as normal siblings?
For the genes, we believe the identical twins will share more similar genes comparing to the non-identical twins. I think in this sense, the twins will share more similar genes comparing to the siblings.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, that's the case. Yeah. I just got amateur biologist
hat. The key is in the word identical.
Identical.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, because for the identical twins, they are cultivated from one egg. Mm-hmm. So comparing to the non-identical twins who were cultivated in two eggs, actually they share more similar genes. Yeah, this is another argument. And we used these two types of twins to figure out the importance of so-called unobservable genes, the role of unobservable genes in this analysis. Yeah.
Because it is quite interesting that some of the variables being addressed here, in our case, how certain parents communicate with children and use more of a dialogic way to engage with them. And I guess one advantage for having two children of identical ages is they tend to have all of those variables lining up, right?
At least they will pretend to be, right? Even though this is common to have some preference towards their children, but if they are twins, they are the same age, you may need to be equal and treat them equally, right?
There's the trope of the good twin, evil twin, though. I don't know if... I'm just joking.
And also when we talked briefly about the birth order, which sort of seems very insignificant, but actually psychologically that starts to play a big role in the older twin and the younger twin.
To the twins themselves, I've known quite a few pairs of twins throughout various stages. So I have friends with twins and then I grew up with some twins. And one thing is they often will say, well, I'm the oldest. Or, you know, oh, you're the little one or things like that. So intra-twin dynamics are interesting as well. But you were saying actually choosing the twin that goes to school first isn't necessarily... So the parents aren't saying you're the oldest, you go first.
No, we didn't find that. Actually, the birth order doesn't matter in this case.
Sorry, what does matter? Did you ever find that out? How do you choose?
I didn't find the direct evidence why they started primary school at different age. So we didn't find a direct evidence. So what we show is potential explanations like financial issues, financial condition, like a number of siblings, parents' education. But we didn't figure out the direct evidence. So we exclude the birth order is not important because it's insignificant, and we didn't find any correlation between birth order and the school starting age. And we also exclude the birth weight because birth weight is also not relevant to school starting age.
See, I think in qualitative terms, right? So it's interesting to me to look at quantitative study like this, where you're looking at norms over large stretches of data and interrogating them for significance values.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as you said at the beginning, before we started, you wanted to attach stories to this because the numbers themselves can be a little bit, we won't call them boring, but they have a different type of podcast friendly nature. And so these qualitative elements in here, I think, are the hook that allows us to understand the data as is interesting or significant to ourselves. But there's a warning with that as well, right? So we do have to be careful that we don't take anecdotal evidence, or we don't say, because there could be tons of exceptions to this on the individual case. That's right. So we're dealing with numerical averages and looking at significant differences.
I think that was another thing I sort of picked up on when reading this. And I think all of those sort of different variables you have there have led to what in the paper you point out to is actually a lot of existing research on this topic, a lot of existing research on the early bird idea. So a whole lot of data, but very little consensus between it.
It's very interesting. As this why, as continues a story after my high school, actually. So when I started my PhD study, so at the very beginning, actually, I was not into this topic. But one day, suddenly, I Google it and figure out, wow, there's a paper about the school starting age and the mental health, something like this. So I just figured out that someone realized the school starting age matters. So I tried to search and trying to figure out some research gap. So finally, I found that there are a lot of researchers use different data, culture background, and use different methodology. You know, so as I explained at the very beginning, maybe it's because of the cultural difference. It's because of the economic development. You know, when the parents choose to educate their children at home or send them to the formal education, it's also depending on the parents' expectation in terms of the return to education. You know, if the return to education is high, parents will keep to invest in their children. If the return to education is not so high, relatively low, they will feel much relaxed and let them go, right? So it's time to go to school. Okay, fine, go to school. Otherwise, they will not feel so keen, like Chinese parents invest a lot of resources in the education. So another issue is that there is a huge research gap in this is because of this kind of methodology, back to the data thing part and the methodology part. So I went to provide a little more evidence on the selection issue. So previously we discussed the career case. So parents choose to change the birth date. In China, it's also the similar story, change the birth date. Recently, last year, actually, maybe 2 years ago, a paper published in Journal of Development Economics using the data from Guangdong province in China. They actually get some administrative data from Guangdong Bureau. This is so-called as a birth certificate data. So in China, you know, we have hukou, something like a passport. But before you get the hukou, you need to get the certificate of birth hotel.
Just to jump in for people who might not be familiar, the hukou is like an internal passport. So where you're born can determine where you're allowed to go to school, for example, or migration to other provinces and things like that.
And the education resource.
That's right. Sorry, not everyone might be familiar with that.
So the birth certificate is very important for children for this case. And every hospital needed to provide this certificate of birth for each case. They studied the birth case, the information on the birth certificate. So they think out that actually parents would like to change the birth date of the children who were a few days later than the cutoff date of school starting. In China, it's September 1st. So if you were born in September 2nd, you need to wait for another year to become age eligible to start the formal education, which is 6. And if you were born in later August 30 or 31st, then you can directly start the formal education when you were 6. So because of this cutoff date policy, parents, what do they observe from the certificate data is that parents trying to choose the C-section to gave earlier birth.
Yeah, this was amazing to me. Like, the actual kind of impact of this belief on people's bodies and the scheduling when you get pregnant, scheduling when you give birth. This was a huge eye-opener to me in every way. And you're smiling at me like...
No, I was also a little bit fascinated by that. In order to have that advantageous position in the school system, to me was really fascinating. I did count backwards when you included that. So if you are aiming for Singles Day, that's the ideal point just after that to get pregnant, which is ironic somewhat.
You can actually well plan your pregnancy schedule, right? One thing. The second thing is if the predicted birth date is within 1 week, just around the cutoff date, then you can choose, actually, because the baby is mature enough to come.
But if you want to have a really peaceful birth, you could go for September 2nd.
Yeah, of course. Parents choose to. From the data, they found that within even 7 days, 2,000 births was changed in advance just several days before the cutoff date. So maybe August 30, August 31st.
It's amazing to me.
The idea of a peaceful birth is amazing.
Well, I just mean that the hospital
who has been through that
there.
Would describe it as peaceful in my world. But anyway.
Yeah, actually, the mom's education is very important. Higher education, the mom would like to choose this C-section to give early birth.
It seems like there's a correlation with a kind of clever mother. Mm. And it so happens that's kind of years of education. But I was really interested to, I guess, ask for the definition of what constitutes higher education here. So higher education level, is that being looked at? Because I did notice in the twin data, you were saying, or the paper saying that junior high school could be an endpoint for some. So does that mean high school, and then how much of university or things like that get brought into this?
I think it's depending on economic development stages. Because when I say the case of these early births or C-section births, is referring to the cohort who were given birth around 2015. So it's just 10 years ago. But regarding my paper, actually, the targets, the responders in this data set is relatively old. So, they were, on average, I think they were around 36 in 2002. So they are relatively old, and they didn't, most of them were born before the compulsory education law. So at that time, the average education attainment is relatively low. It's around 12 or 11.
Right.
So 12 is a high school, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, if they have already gotten the high school degree, they're actually higher education in their cohort. But nowadays, because of the economic development, because of these kind of compulsory education laws, more and more people have this opportunity to get a college or university degree. So for the updated new generation, so high education referring to this college and vocational college or university.
Yeah. I will thank you, actually, because reading through this paper made me ask about my own biases and assumptions in what constituted these things.
Okay.
We're in a very affluent area here in Ningbo, and of course we work in a university and in a very privileged environment. We have students who are coming here who are themselves very privileged as well. So, yeah, it's easy for us to kind of lose sight, I think, of other parts of China, and especially other eras where there has been this incredibly rapid development that's taken place. Yeah.
So, yes, frankly speaking, for the whole population, you know, China is a very huge country and so many people here. So on average, actually, around 50% of Chinese actually only have the junior high school degree. So our students are excellent good. Their parents are also excellent good because most of them have a very good family background. They can afford the tuition fee. But, you know, on average in China, you know, the average education attainment is not so high. And the income, of course, is not so high. Yeah.
And this was a good reminder of that, actually. And that's why thinking about the twin studies and, you know, from our place of privilege, saying, well, how could you ever start your twins in different years? Well, that's because my frame of reference can't take in some of this stuff. So it was quite good to be reminded of that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. To actually kind of summarize your findings in this paper, okay? Because this interests me. Is the early bird thesis correct? Your answer seemed to be no, but kind of.
No, I think. Because actually from our study, so early bird actually have more education year. If you start the primary school 1 year earlier, then you will have a half year more education. But in terms of the earning, actually, we didn't find any evidence that the early bird success in the labor market, including earning, wage rate, or employment rate. Why? Because in China, the degree is very important. Return to the junior high school is almost zero. But if you get a high school degree or college degree, you will earn much more comparing to those who only have a junior high school degree. So even though the early bird can have a higher probability to get a junior high school degree, but they didn't successfully get a high school degree. So if we just look at the education attainment, okay, on average, they're better. But if we look into the more specific details, like which degree they get, they are not so successful. Yeah.
So there was no need for that scheduled C-section.
Yeah. Right. From this paper, yes. And what we emphasize is the importance of family. Because if we just using some simple correlation analysis, we figure out that the coefficient are all very significant. Early bird actually benefit from this starting school age early. And so statistical analysis are very significant. So early bird more education, early bird more earnings, higher earnings, and more likely to be employed. But once we conclude the family background within the same household, once we exclude those genes, then these significant results disappear.
And just to jump in, is this the advantage of taking this kind of approach instead of the more generalized approach of the kind of OLS or?
Yeah. For the OLS, it's just a correlation between the school starting age and the outcome we are interested. But we needed to deal with so many other factors in the black box. If you can control everything, ideally, then it's fine, right? Or the And also, school starting age is random. There's no selection issue. It's also fine. But as we discuss a lot, family issues or some cultural issues, there are so many selection factors. So
the world's a messy place, isn't it? There's a lot of variables going on.
That's why we do this research, and that's where we have a podcast about.
That's right.
This sort of brings me on to actually talk about any potential critique or pushback against this article, because given how important this idea is, the early bird narrative, did you kind of, you're saying basically that it's wrong. You're saying that it isn't correct as a narrative.
Yeah.
So did you experience any kind of critique or pushback against this? Because it seems to be quite a substantial cultural construction that you're challenging here.
This paper is to some extent is limited because of the data availability. We can only look into those earnings, outcomes, or the education attainment. But if we have enough data, we can also check the social activities, mental health, cognitive skills. So some paper using the data from university students in Italy, Bocconi University, actually. So they studied whether the early bird will perform better in the university. And this result is very interesting because they found that the younger students perform better in the tests. However, they don't want to make friends. They are less likely to fall in love.
Wow.
Relationship,
whoa,
you know?
Okay.
Goodness.
They are perfect in the academic, in the tests. But for the psychological perspective, they are not so involved in the social skills like this. So I think this is another part. What we observe is the income, is occupation. This is very easy to be observed.
Employment rate, right?
The employment rate. But in deeps, how about some other factors that are not so easy to be observed? Yeah.
That's really interesting. I was wondering a little bit about the knock-on effect. So, extrapolating what you have explored here and then maybe applying it to other questions. So, should students be discouraged from taking a gap year, for example, between high school and university? Because many times...
You've just given Xuyan her next paper, I'm guessing, with that suggestion.
Yeah, very good suggestion.
I'm just very curious because we were told as parents, oh, you can't let your kids take a gap year. I think also because of the economics of international schools, because they were part of their marketing is how successful their placement into universities is. So if you have students that are taking a year off, it can affect how you can market yourself as getting kids into Harvard and things like
that. In Asian countries, the age is a very important topic, the age culture. In China, there's age criteria in the labor market is a kind of underlying requirements. So if you are, once you are over 35, you are not eligible to apply for some research funding in China.
I've seen the talent schemes and things like that.
So it's age is limited, actually. If you have a research gap, parents will considering about the risk that you may be too late in the labor market. So once you are over 35, you are not able to apply for some position in public sectors.
Right, okay.
You have less opportunity in the labor market. But to me, I think personally, in my own opinion, I encourage my students to have a gap year if they want. Because it's very important to explore who you are, what you are really interested in. You are always in the formal education. It's quite competitive. Even so, our campus are much better, I think.
Quite often, I think a gap year can also be a signifier of affluence as well, a signifier of middle classness. I certainly felt that when I was younger. An identity associated.
But you can take a gap year to work.
Yeah, but nobody did.
Well, I'm not suggesting that, but, it's... Yeah, that it's not merely a signal of affluence, perhaps. The other question, just to piggyback on that a little bit, in the Chinese system, I don't know if this is the case, do students ever skip or fail grades in the same sense? So a student could be held back or a student could jump a grade?
Yes, it's possible.
Okay.
It's possible, but very rare.
Is it okay?
Yeah, yes. Actually, in the labor economics and in these microeconomics, studying these education-related issues, so we do find that if in a class, if we have more repeating students, actually it has some negative impact on their peers in terms of the academic performance.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So we do realize that it's important to pay attention to those low ability students. We needed to help. And in this way, we can also indirectly help other students in the classroom.
But there's then the age-related issue as well, right? So there could, if students are skipping, they're younger in the grade for sure. And then if they're being held back, they're going to be older in the grade. And children themselves would be acutely aware of this, I think.
In these cases, escape or repeat, I think a very important issue is about the psychological part, some mental health issues, because they need to change their identity within the classroom. This is a similar situation in Korea, I think, because in Korea, the age culture is very important. So even though they were similar, but if in terms of the months, or they are very similar, they are just older than 1 month. It's actually similar age, right? But because of the age calculation or age culture in Korea, they thought, oh, okay, you are older, you are 1 year older than me, so you are the senior.
Well, it's also language-based. You have to inflect language depending. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Xuyan, I am interested in how you came to this topic. Very much, because you're very subjective. You put sort of your own experiences in this and you talk about yourself a lot. It also feels like you came to it not long out of your PhD and that this was a different topic to your PhD research. Or was this an extension of it in some way. And it's also, as I pointed out at the beginning, written in collaboration with two other academics. I'd love to know how you all got together and how you all decided to address this.
Actually, during my PhD studies, I was lost in some specific period, exploring some other topics. But finally, I just realized I was quite interested in the China-related issues, and the topic is kind of focusing on the education part. Actually, in my PhD dissertation, all those chapters are related to the education. So it's also part of my PhD study. And regarding this coursership, actually, one of the coursers from Zhejiang University is my supervisor. He actually worked in Chinese University of Hong Kong several years ago, and just joined the Zhejiang University 3 years ago. So he's my supervisor, and he provided the data, actually, one thing. And another thing is that when I came up with these stories, my supervisor provided me some comments in terms of those methodology issues, because he's much more familiar with me than me with these data issues. So he provided me a lot of information about the data and some challenging issues with dealing with this data. Like actually in the paper, we also discussed some other topics like externality within family, like measurement error, something like this. So he actually provided a lot of comments on that. For another co-author from Beijing, actually, he is joined when I present my paper in a conference, in a workshop. Actually, he provided me a lot of comments, and he challenged me in terms of like measurement that you said, in terms of why the school starting age is different among the same household. So he gave me some insightful suggestions. So frankly speaking, I think this paper is quite smooth. And all my co-authors are very supportive. Mm-hmm. And the idea is actually from my personal experience. Mm-hmm. But when I show the idea to them, yes, sister is also very attractive. And they say, okay, let's start. And maybe you can make it better. So, yeah.
What conversation do you hope this paper will start? What do you hope will be the outcome of this?
You mean the impact of this paper?
Indeed.
When I started this paper, I never thought about that, frankly speaking. Yeah. But from the results, I think the implication is, I think parents sometimes don't need to be so serious about those details of education to their children, you know? So sometimes parents themselves or the family background is more important to them, so-called the timing of education or when they should start or the children should, you know, catch up with their peers. So relax, let's just relax, you know? So I think this is my key point from these results, the implication of this paper. Regarding on the policies, as just beyond the paper, regarding on the policies about the education, I think if the government considering about the female labor market participation, because they needed to spend time to take care of children before the primary school, if they can provide more support to the preschool education, like a kindergarten, like a preschool training sessions like this. So if they are support, they are more mom can start or read back to the labor market earlier. So this is something related to policy that I want to emphasize.
Well, that's great. And ultimately, I get to ask the fun question, which is, what's next? So where do you think you'll take this research, or what projects are you involved with right now?
Actually, I was still doing something about the education and as well as the age. Age is always very important. Frankly speaking, just last week, I discussed the age problem, age discrimination in the labor market in China with my colleagues, and they sort of needed to build up a model to figure out if without this age discrimination in the labor market, will the economic growth you know, better. It will have a high economic growth or something like this. This is just a conversation, just a chatting with my colleagues. What I am doing about the education, as I said, when we say the reputation, actually we also studied some pair effects in the classroom. So some specific lower or discriminated cohort, how this kind of cohort affect their peers' academic performance. One thing, regarding on the age, I continue studying something with age. So, you know, there is some retirement age in China. So how the retirement age or compulsory retirement age affect those raising household resource allocation? You know, the sandwich generation, they need to take care of the elder parents. And simultaneously, they need to take care of their adult children. For example, if I have a child, of course not yet. So if I have a child and my mom needed to take care of me, help me to take care of our children because I have to go to work, right? And in this sense, my grandmom is also very old, is over 80. So they needed to decide the time allocation or resource allocation between different generations. So currently I am working on this part. Yeah.
Well, speaking as a very young yaya, I appreciate this examination. And I really look forward to seeing some of your work come out.
Okay, thank you.
Please do come back and share it with us in the future. Thank you so much for your time, Shaya.
Thanks so much for joining us.
With 110 academic staff from 22 countries and regions, the Faculty of Humanities and Social Science is committed to delivering world-class teaching and research, with a growing focus on interdisciplinary projects. Our faculty includes the School of Economics, the School of Education and English, the School of International Communications, and the School of International Studies, as well as the Language Center.
We are committed to internationally renowned and excellent research in a thriving transdisciplinary environment of outstanding individual and collective research. Our faculty is home to a number of groundbreaking projects, including but not limited to digital heritage, game cultures, the historical and contemporary Silk Roads, health economics, cognitive neuroscience of language, and gender studies.
The Faculty of Humanities and Social Science is also proud to host a high percentage of international staff who bring expertise to areas such as history, politics, journalism, media, and film studies, education, English, micro and macroeconomics, and more, as well as a wealth of experience from international universities.
We strive to offer an education and student experience reflecting the most up-to-date knowledge and achieve this through the close integration of teaching and research. Our research-led teaching places cutting-edge knowledge at the center of our curriculum, while our academic staff actively engage our students in their ongoing research activities.